Welcome to It Is What It Is. I'm Sean Marie, and today we are going to cover Pocatello's Missing Five. They are not related, but they start in 1975 and go into the 1980s. So it's pretty weird that a bunch of girls came up missing and murdered from there. And so when I was doing the Ted Bundy story, when you look up Lynette, she leads you to all the other missing girls. And so there are two girls in this that we've talked about before, but there's never any shame or wrongness in talking about them a million more times. So we are going to start out the Pocatello Five with the first girl to go missing. And that would be 12-year-old Lynette Culvert. She was born in July on the 31st in 1962 in Washington. Her family moved to Idaho for safety. Her parents looked at Idaho as like a safe town, a safe place to be. There was a bunch of crazy stuff happening in Washington, and so they just wanted their kids to grow up normal and have a safe childhood. So they picked up Pocatello, Idaho. And unfortunately, in 1975, that would be a mistake. On May 5th, 44 years ago, May 5th, 1975, Lynette left Alameda Junior High School for lunch to go home, they assume, and she never made it there. The school did not call her mother and let her mother know that Lynette never came back from lunch. Her disappearance went unnoticed for some time. That morning of May 5th, Lynette and her mom got into an argument. One of those arguments, as a parent, this would be the argument that tortures you. And Lynette says, "What if I didn't come home tonight?" And being a mom in that moment, I know what she went through. You know what I mean? Like, when you're arguing with your kids, you both say shit. People say shit, but this is horrible. So Lynette says, "What if I didn't come home tonight?" And her mom says, "That'll be okay." And like, that's your end of your words with your daughter before she goes missing. Is that'll be okay. It's just so tragic. So, according to Ted Bundy, he picked her up outside of Alameda Junior High, took her back to the Holiday Inn where he raped and drowned her in the hotel bathroom, and then dumped her body in the Snake River, is what he claims. He claims he didn't know that she was 12 years old. I guess he says she gave off an older appearance. Her mom never listened to Ted Bundy's confession, and her parents are both still alive to this day. The dad and the sister Nancy did listen to his confession, and her dad says that like everything that she told Bundy about moving there from Washington, her family was getting ready to move into a bigger house, all that stuff was true. So I kind of believe it. And obviously, why would he admit to something and then not know? So there's a memorial bench at the community pool in Pocatello that Captain Borox and his wife, I should have wrote down her name. I probably butchered his too. I don't know. He does a YouTube channel, and I will link his story on Lynette because he did amazing. Him and his wife, amazing. And I guess that this case touched them so much that they went and got a GoFundMe page and got the bench. So now there's a bench in her memory. So her parents went 14 years before Bundy's confession, not knowing what happened to Lynette. And there was a bunch of different stories, like she ran off to the res, a whole bunch of stories that nothing ever panned out. And so her parents moved, because that part about it was right. They were in the middle of a move. So they move. The sister stays in Pocatello and keeps the family phone number for years. just for her sister to have something to call. Like, it was like their land, like, what did her sister say? I think it was like their shining lantern or something. And it was just precious. And like, they take you around Pocatello and everything else. So it's a really good little, like, self-made documentary, but amazing. So, and it's the first one I've ever found on her too, by the way. So that's her story. She's never, like I said, never been found. He did actually, fun fact, he got executed on her mom's birthday. And her mom said it was like a good birthday present that he got executed on her birthday. So, she is the first one. Okay, so this one, my sources are Google, of course, good old-fashioned Google, and a slideshow from the East Idaho Cold Case, Inc. I'll try to post their Facebook link. I'll try to figure that out. But this one takes place in 1978. And I've never heard of this one until, obviously, looking it up. So this is about Patricia Campbell. She goes by Patsy. She's 15 years old. She disappeared from Alameda Park along with her friend Tina Anderson, who was 12 years old, during a July 22nd, 1978 Pioneer Day celebration. So that day for Patsy, the parade started at 11 a.m. Bud, her dad, had planned to go with his kids to this parade, but got a last minute emergency repair call from a customer. So he told his kids, including Patsy, to walk down to the parade and then go to the park, and then he would find them later on. So that morning for Tina, she went to her sister's house. Her sister asked her to babysit. She said, no, I already told Miss Norton that I would watch her two-year-old that night at 7. Sorry, sis, can't. After seeing her sister, she went to a friend's, and then we're going to call that friend Sally, okay? That is not her real name. We don't know her real name. I don't know her real name. I'm going to call her Sally. The Facebook slideshow calls her something else. I think it's like Donna or something like that. Then Tina and Sally walked down to Alameda Park for the day of fun. And then her mom insisted on giving her money for food that day, even though she didn't plan on spending the money. Her mother insisted. That was the last time Tina was seen alive, was by her mom. So at the park, Patsy was walking around and she's bullshitting with a bunch of different friends. She's going to like different groups around the whole park. And her brother Dale, they are in charge of little sister Melissa and Elizabeth until the dad could come and find them. Dale was hanging out with his friends and then going back and checking on the sisters throughout the early afternoon. Sally and Tina and Patsy then see each other. They meet up. Sally says that the girls were all smoking some pot. A small amount of weed is what she says. By the way, happy 420. And they were being carefree and enjoying the day just like everyone else. Then Sally says that they had to split up around 1:45 p.m. because she had to be home by 2 because she was grounded. And that the girls gave her a hard time about being grounded. Before she could leave, Tina asked her if she could come back later when she went to go babysit. And Sally said maybe. And Tina said she'd call her around 5 to check. That call never came. So the last thing that quote-unquote Sally remembers about said event. So Tina and Patsy are the last thing she remembers is they are standing with Mary Edwards. She is a student at Franklin Junior High. Sally and Tina had become... Sally has become friends with Tina, okay? And they don't like Mary. It's not that they don't like Mary. Mary's just kind of a little more adventurous. She's not a bad kid or anything like that. She's just a little more rebellion. There we go. She's rebellious. The feeling I get. That's speculation. I should say that shit too. Speculation all the way. I feel like she's a rebellious little ass, but that's just me. In her youth, she may still be alive. But anywho, like I said, Sally says the last thing she remembers is that Tina and Patsy are now talking to Tina's friend Mary. So the family had been concerned about her hanging out with them because Tina had told other kids around that you could get alcohol and drugs and they were always available at Mary's older sister's house. So Tina had recently asked a family member to buy the girls alcohol and got hella mad when the family member said no. They were close enough that Tina referred to Mary's mom, Shirley, as her second mom. Tina was a bright and gifted student, and her family was worried that her grades would begin to start slipping if her friendship with the Edwards family continued. So, like I said, they just did hood rat shit together, I think. Because, like, all my friends in junior high that called my mom mom, I did a bunch of hood rat shit with all of them. And, like, the only reason they called my mom mom was try to be like, ooh, I'm on her good side. She likes me, see? So that we could go fuck around and do stupid shit together. Just saying. So, the last thing Patsy's little sister, Melissa, who was 9 at the time, remembers is that her sister and Tina were pushing her on the swings and that they went to go get corn dogs for everybody but never came back. She remembers seeing Patsy leaning up against a strange man wearing a hoodie and large rimmed glasses. Patsy seemed unbalanced, and another male saw this too. Saw Patsy with the same dude. It's the last memory Melissa had of her sister. She has since passed away. Bud said that when he got to the park, he could not find his kids and went home to see if they had gone home too. And they had. After searching for Patsy in vain, Bud recalls going back to the park every 2 hours throughout the late afternoon and the evening looking for her. Bud went everywhere. He went to her friend's house, local hangouts. He drove up and down the streets near the park, hoping to see her. This wasn't like Patsy. At all, her family and her father mostly knew something was wrong. While Bud was looking for Patsy, he came across a worried Hispanic father. They compared notes about their two missing daughters. The man was from American Falls, which is not far from Pocatello. They're like somewhat connected, but they're not, if that makes sense. They're like neighboring little places, I think. They're super fucking close. That probably doesn't make any sense. Who cares? Anyway, they're super close. It was most likely that they were a farming / immigrant family. There's a bunch of farmland up there. They wished each other luck and went on their ways. Bud always wondered if she wasn't reported was because of their immigration status. Because he wished he would have gotten the man's name, because there was never another report filed of a missing teenager besides the two, even though he knew that he ran into the father, but he never knew what happened, if that dad found the girl or not. They didn't exchange numbers or names, they just wished each other luck and went on their way. Which is horribly sad. Nobody publicly, except for one person, claims to see the girls after 2 p.m., except for when Tina does go, she arrives at the babysitting job at 6:30, okay? 30 minutes early than when she's supposed to be there. The mom tells her to come back and that they're not ready to go out yet, so she needs to come back at 7 to watch the kids. So she goes. So that mom says that she watches Tina go across to the park and start talking to a girl in the swings with another girl. When she failed to come back, that mom searched the park and then called Tina's house and told them that she had never come back. She had never forgiven herself, I guess, for asking Tina to come back and not letting her stay. So truly, no one has seen either one of the girls after 6:30 p.m. on July 22, 1978. An official missing persons report was filed that night with the Pocatello Police Department. On July 24, 1978, that Monday after they went missing, Officer Fenwick, in his report, said along with talking to Bud, he checked Carol Edwards, Mary's sister. That's like a Mary's sister, okay? She said that Tina and another girl and Mary came to her house late Saturday. That's about 2:30 p.m. And then they all went on a car ride. That she said it was like Moon Lake Mine. She said the girls were dropped back off at the park at 6:30 because Tina had hinted that she had a babysitting job at 7. She showed up and was told to come back and they weren't ready to leave yet. So she went back to the park. He talked to Mary at her house. She says that she went with the two girls on Saturday and they didn't talk about leaving. Oh, sorry. That they had talked to her about running away and that she had gotten in a fight with her dad before. Okay, so then he goes back. Oh, wait, sorry. In this report, there's two different reports because he goes back and talks to her. He said she didn't say, she did say she was with the two girls on Saturday, but they didn't talk about leaving. She stated about 2 weeks ago, Tina had gotten in a fight with her dad and that she said that she was going to run away. That report was done on July 24th at 12:10 p.m. Days then led to months and to years and then kicked off the hunting season of 1981. Okay. The remains were found on October 15th, 1981, by Roger and Dennis. They found the girls' remains and some clothing up at Two Mile Canyon near Malad. That's about an hour away, give or take. On October 28th, 1981, a follow-up was done with the last person to see the girls. This is the officer's notes from that time. He went to talk to Mary, now 16, to ask if there were any facts or rumors that might help. She said she was very good friends with Tina and that Tina never told her that she was gonna run away. And like I said before, she did say that that's what she said. She said that they got in a fight with her dad and that she was said that she was gonna leave. So now she's saying that Tina never said that and Tina would never run away. And that Tina never called her to tell her where she was. But Mary had heard rumors that some chick named Candy did get a call from Tina and told her that both the girls were in Salt Lake City at the time. But Mary was not familiar with who Candy was, so the cops told her to ask around and if she could find out to let them know. And at 8:30 that night, they called Carol, Mary's mom, to speak with her and her husband, Monty. Then they went over to the house and asked if there was anything else that they could give to add any info to the original statements they made back then. They said that they had driven to Moonlight Mine with both the girls and had dropped them back off at the park in the afternoon and gave the same chain of events that they did back in 1978. Monty said that since they went missing in 1978, it came up now and again as to where the girls' whereabouts would be. His brother Richard had mentioned that one of his girlfriends, Candy, which is weird, which the officers assumed was the same Candy that Mary was talking about, had gotten a call from Tina. Then Monty said that if it concerned Rich, oh, if they contacted his brother, he probably would refuse questioning because he did not want to be involved in the case. And Rich said Monty doesn't even have a phone, but he does live in the White House by the fishing game. But he couldn't supply any more information about who Candy is. This report was done and filed October 29th, 81 at 12:20 in the morning. So who the fuck is Candy, by the way? And why did Candy never come up in 1978? No one ever mentions a Candy until later on. Who is she? Does she really even exist? Tina's family has no idea who that person is. So their bodies, like I said, were found. They were identified through dental records. But there was a teenager amongst them. A third skull was found in 1986, a few hundred yards away from where the girls were originally found. So that's weird as fuck. That, what, four or five years later, another skull is found? Could that be the Hispanic dad's daughter? We don't know. So it's super weird. So what are the odds, really, of three victims showing up in the same area 4 years apart from each other if they're not connected as somewhere? Like, who? I mean, I guess killers could pick the same spot, but I mean, like, damn. Y'all are on a spiritual connection if you guys are that connected. You know what I'm saying? Two killers, one spot? Fuck that. No. So, now we're going to go to some snitches. So, in December of 2016, an inmate at Idaho Correctional Facility, when they were gathering for a chow, a conversation about a reopening cold case in Pokey was happening. This was overheard by an inmate. One inmate, Gary Withrow, from Pokey, asked the other guys, "Who were you guys talking about?" They said, "Tina Anderson." He said, "No shit. I was one of the last people to see her." He says he went. Him and Monty Webb had taken the girls for a ride to Moon Like Mine in Monty's truck. And that they were drinking beer and that they had to take the girls back. This tip to the park. This tip was given to the police in late 2006. And remember what Carol said, okay? It was just them and the girls. No one ever brings up a Gary, okay? In 1978, a George? I don't know. A George or a Gary? He's passed away, so really, it's fine. We can speculate on his name. But no one... Oh, Greg. He goes by Greg. Huh? Who is Greg? Greg was found in the same yearbook as the girls at Alameda Junior High. And here, another classmate was Richard Hodges. He is the little brother of Monty Webb. Weird. All connecting. So Greg here is friends with Rich, who Monty says if the cops go to him, that Rich ain't gonna say nothing because he don't want to be involved. But just so happens that his friend, his very good friend, is in prison saying that he was with Monty the day the girls went missing. Oh, how the web weaves. That's what you say. So like I said, he was found in the same thing. In 1978, Tina had completed 9th grade and Patsy in 7th grade and Patsy in 9th grade. All four went to Alameda in 1977 and 1978. Greg and Rich were very close, long life friends, and he passed away, like I said, in 2010. So the girls went to 451 Warren that day. That's an address. And behind 451 through the alley is where you end up going to 448 Parish, okay? And that is the home of Clarence and Shirley. Those are the parents of Monty, Lonnie, and Re-Lynn, and Richard Hodges. And they have lived there many, many years. Both parents have now passed on. But these are the parents. This house, okay, so where the girls were, where they, the house that they say they were hanging out, if you go down that alley, is Grandma and Grandpa's house. So that's, we're connecting, okay? Bam, bam. We're now connecting. A woman who wants to remain anonymous to the Idaho Falls cold case, to the Idaho cold case, I mean, also came forward in June 2018 to report that in 1980, when she was 14 years old, a man driving a dark colored muscle car known to her as Monty Webb offered her a ride, which she nervously declined. He told her that he knew her friend Tina, and when he started making advances towards the girl, she quickly got out of the car, asked to be let out of the car. She believes that he used Tina to lure her into the car. Tina had been missing for 2 years at this point. Her remains had not been found. So if you go back, in the space, according to everybody, according to all these people, this family, in the space of 30 minutes between 6:30 and 7 p.m. on July 22nd, 1978, some random-ass stranger drove to the park, saw the two girls, took them to Two Mile Canyon, shot them, because that's what was proven with their skeleton remains, that they had been shot, shot them for no good reason. Or, theory two, the girls run away, which they leave behind money, clothes, all personal items. Both sets of parents know in their heart, run away, not the option. Patsy had gotten her driver's license a few days before. She was super excited, and her dad had made plans with her that she could drive on the highway that Monday, July 24th. She never got to make that drive. She had a baby. She had planned to babysit that night. Tina had planned to babysit that night. A kid that she knew and adored very well. She never made it to that babysitting appointment. So the odds of those two running away when Patsy had plans with her father and Tina had plans just doesn't add up. Doesn't make sense. So according to the East Idaho Facebook page, there is a $10,000 reward offering any information or disappearances in any of the four women that I will tell you about. And there's more, because one of the detectives says that the more time that lapses, most of these cases are most likely to go cold and won't be solved. He added, with new technology, they're hoping that hopefully some of these cases will soon be able to be solved. Every day detectives work cold cases. He says, basically, you have to start over from the very beginning and have a new eye on everything. I guess currently there's 12 detectives in Pocatello on the police force. Now, one of the other girls to go missing, we've talked about her before too, was Linda Smith. And this happened in 1981. So Ben, her brother, was there the day that she got kidnapped. No one believed him that she was kidnapped until later on. So in 1981, investigators assumed 14-year-old Linda Diane Smith ran away. So they never took her case very seriously at all. It wasn't until 11 months later when her skeleton remains were found, including her skull. Ugh. And that's when, like I said, they went back to Ben and now believed Ben's story. Ben said that a man broke into their home and took his sister right from her bedroom. This case quickly went cold. No arrests or anything were ever made. No suspect was ever named. They do open the case from time to time and treat it as a fresh case. Since then, her brother has moved to Utah because of what happened in his family and everything, I guess, is just too hard. The family says that maybe others who live in the Pocatello area in their neighborhood back then in 1980s will remember something and come forward. No one is sure. So the nightmare in 1981 began while Linda was babysitting her brother Ben. He was just 9 years old at the time. At 2 a.m., Ben heard scuffling and screaming sounds of a possible struggle, like someone was kicking. He says, "I woke up to see my sister being dragged out of the house," he said. The man had his arms around her. He said he ran to the back of the house to try to stop the intruder, but the man pushed him to the ground. He said, "Get away, or he would be hurt." The man forced Linda into a van with flames on the side. Ben watched hopelessly as the van drove off. That was the last time he had seen his sister alive. Ben ran to the neighbor's house to try to get help because his house did not have a phone. That was just the beginning of a nightmare for the Smith family. Ben's mother was on welfare and raising him and his sister Lori by herself. The family did not keep their doors locked in the Pocatello. And the cops assumed, because that she was a single mom and they were kind of on hardships, that Linda had just ran away. Because she had previously ran away just days before. So the investigators believed that it was a perfect recipe for a runaway, like Linda had just taken off on her own. And this, by the way, came from the Idaho State Journal, this article that I'm reading to you guys. They came to the conclusion that I was covering up for her, is what Ben said. He now in his 30s remembers that they did not believe him, that they did not take fingerprints, they didn't do anything. They never did anything, and hardly anything was preserved from that time that far long ago. Even when her clothes had been found in a ditch a week later by a city employee, police did not still not believe that she had been kidnapped. 11 months later, her remains were found, like I said, in a trashy neighborhood of Pocatello. Police finally had to admit that Ben was probably right and that their investigation has been botched completely, and there's no making up for that lost time. An exact cause of death was never determined. Ben was stuck with the guilt from not being able to save his sister, which I can't even imagine having that on my conscience. I don't know. It ruined him. For some time, he had actually gone into some hospitals. In 1997, he was committed to a mental hospital for a short period of time to seek the proper help that he needed. He just hopes that one day someone can help solve what happened to his sister, because it's just not fair that this kid, well, now he's a man, but then was a kid. Imagine screaming that your sister was taken. She's not gone. She was taken. And everybody looking at you like, "Oh, wow, you sure do have an active imagination. And you sure do love your sister to lie for her like that and to cover for her." And it was never a lie. It was never a cover. Someone broke into his home and took his sister, and his family has never gotten justice till this very day, which is horrible, absolutely horrible. Like I said, they did question someone that they believe might have been connected, because the next case I'm going to tell you about is so similar that they thought maybe the two had been connected. Oh, God. And like I said, Linda was number 4, I think. Yeah, I think Linda was number 4. Because the body of Cindy Louise Bringhurst. I'm so sorry if I butchered that. She was 14 years old. She went to Alameda Junior High School. She had come up missing, vanished from a Pocatello apartment where she was babysitting in 1983. Her body was discovered in the Mill Creek area by a fisherman a month later. The police will not release her cause of death or if she had been sexually assaulted, because in a cold case, they like that to be the thing that connects all the dots, is like this person knew how they passed or what had happened to them. So they do not give out any of that information until, obviously, they don't think that people are going to be alive or something like that. They usually just try to keep anything they can that would solve the case to themselves in a cold case without releasing it to the public, so that not everybody and their dog can come forward. So Cindy disappeared somewhere between 11:45 on June 4th and 1:45 June 5th. While she was babysitting in the apartments of the 100 block of Highland Drive, a woman whose two-year-old daughter, her daughter that Cindy was caring for, the lady that Cindy was babysitting for worked at the Oasis Bar in Pocatello. Shady enough, dude. So her purse and keys were stolen that night that Cindy came up missing. I don't know who the lady is. Her name's never been released, or she's never spoken to any reporters about it that I know of that I could find. She says, though, that she calls Cindy at 11:45 and says, "Hey, my keys have been stolen. Shit kind of hit the fan here. I'm going to be a little late." But then she goes home 2 hours later is when she gets home. So she's not gone very much much longer. She finds the door unlocked, the TV on, and Cindy's gone. Just fucking gone. Thankfully, her baby is peacefully asleep in the room, unharmed. So that's important. The woman calls Cindy's parents, and she's like, "Just so y'all know, your daughter just fucking dipped on babysitting." Like I said, this is all speculation. We don't know if they cussed or what they said. But she says, "Hey, she ran away while babysitting my kid. Your kid's not here. Just so y'all know, probably ain't gonna pay her." That's what I would say, anywho. I really would. I'd be like, "I ain't paying you. You fucking ran off." So, like, they believe that the stolen book, her pocketbook, her purse, pocketbook, whatever you want to call it, they believe that that may be connected to the disappearance. That it was somebody that knew that she had a babysitter at home, a cute, adorable young babysitter at home, so they took her shit to prevent her from getting home in time so that they could go do something. So my guess would be, who the hell was in the bar that night? You know what I mean? Who was she talking to in the bar that night that knew that she had a babysitter at her house? Those are the people that they should have been looking into. 1 week after her disappearance, they had a suspect in the purse theft. That, because it was found in the male's vehicle. So that's weird. Let's see. It's just, I don't know. To go missing, and there was a cop. I think he was like a new on the force. I want to say he wasn't like an old timer. He lived in the apartment below where Cindy was. So that's just odd. It's odd that if it was somebody that she knew that she willingly left, which I don't believe that's the case, because obviously she was a responsible person if she's done this type of babysitting before. And so, and that nobody in the apartment building, it's like a fourplex. From the pictures, it looks like a fourplex. So that's two on top, two on bottom. I mean, that's 1 o'clock, that is pretty late. But in an apartment, if you think if someone was like fighting somebody to not get abducted, that there would have been a fight? Or like, how even creepier is it that no one did hear anything and whoever did take her was able to just go in, take her, and leave? How do so many kids come up missing? And like, my whole life, I've lived in Idaho Falls, which is a good 45, 30 minutes away. I would think I would go to my aunt's house in the summer and like stay the summer like weeks and stuff in Pocatello. Never heard about any of this stuff, except from the Lynette, obviously. But that's the only one I've ever heard of, and that's just because of Ted Bundy. So it's just really weird. And the fact that they've never talked about it again, like they did come out at one point in time and be like, we solved Tina's and Patsy's case. It's solved. But then they never arrested anybody. They never did anything about it. And then they came out and they were like, just fucking kidding. We need to go back and get more info before we can do anything. So it's just, I don't know, it's just so weird. And then I read through the comments too on Facebook regarding the other girls' case, that like this family that I told you guys about, they commented on it and they're like, my family has nothing to do with it. If they would have found anything, they would have arrested us and all this stuff. So I do want to point out that that is speculation. Now, on Cindy's case, though, her family got taken advantage of by people that I think, I don't know, when you do this for a living, you're just like, I think you're lower of the lowest. But back in the day, there was a famous psychic. And you guys all know Judy Bell from California. She used to have, I think it was like a 1-800 number back in the day that you guys could call and she would give information. Well, she tells this family that she can help them. She tell them everything they need to know if they pay her $100 an hour. This is what they were billed for. Her family was billed for this, $100 an hour for 35 hours, $3,500. And she says that she feels like it was a man and that Cindy had control all the way up until leaving the apartment. When Cindy got to the bottom of the stairs is when she lost control of the situation, which is weird. And then another woman from Blackfoot calls this detective and is like, I'm a psychic. I am not trying to get anything out of this. I just want to help this family for free. So he's like, I didn't question her. I went to Blackfoot to talk to her. She was an elderly woman. She was on oxygen. She didn't, like I said, she didn't want any money. She took them within 25 yards of where Cindy's body was found. A summer party was reported to be going on in Mill Creek at that time when Cindy went missing. But there was never any evidence found of anything that Cindy went to that party or was even seen there or anything. They say that after her body was discovered, they found nothing else in that area. Nothing else was found. They say it was unknown if she was actually killed there or at another location and taken there, just because there was nothing found at all there. Her body was partially submerged into some water, so a lot of the evidence had washed away. The woman who she was babysitting for did move out of the apartment soon after her disappearance. The police say that that does not mean that there was any shady things, that she just didn't feel comfortable and moved away. And that woman has never been a suspect in Cindy's case or anything else like that, but they don't have any information or anything like that. She just seriously went babysitting and poofed. The two girls went on a drive or something, went back to the park, and then they disappeared. And it's like Alameda Park, Alameda Junior High. I'm not 100% sure where that neighborhood falls in Pocatello, but I don't know. Like this, when I first started reading about it, I was kind of like, what the fuck? I've heard about cases all over Idaho my whole life. I would tell grown-ups, like, oh, I like murder. And they were like, oh, did you know about this? Never once has anybody ever mentioned these four, I won't say five, four girls before. And it's just so horrible that I just feel like there has to be something nowadays that can help solve this type of stuff. I tried to reach out to the cold case detective, but with all of the corona and everything going on, I think that fool was way too busy, because like I never even got a call back. But usually when people find out that I want to like ask them and that I do this, that they're like, yeah, no, I don't want to talk to you anyway. But like, I don't know, you guys, if you guys are from Pocatello, have you guys ever heard any of those stories? And if so, what are like, what do you guys from Pocatello believe happened to these sweet little girls? It's just horrible. I don't know. But yeah, that's the story for the Pocatello Missing 5. And I want to say that even though Ted Bundy did say he killed her, Lynette's body has never been found. So she is missing. She is still amongst the missing who need to be found or whose cases need to be solved. Linda and Lynette have never been found. Our other girls have been found. We just need to find out what happened to them and who is responsible for taking such beautiful young lives. It's horrible, and hopefully one day you guys can all have justice. So tune in for another episode tomorrow, and we'll keep going. Much love, guys. Be safe. Bye.